Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Italo Labanen. He'll be telling us all about the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association upcoming fishing derby. Tell me a little bit about your experiences with the ICHA fishing derby.
Well, first of all, let me tell you that I've been producing TV shows and traveling throughout North America for the last 30 years. And I must tell you that the ICHA Handicapable Fishing Derby is the foremost event of its kind in North America. I participate at lots of derbies. You know, 2 weeks I'm going to Northern Ontario to cover a large pike event, pike tournament. Last year I was covering an event on Manitoulin Island. But the nature of the event, where it's an outreach in the community, to be a blessing to families that have handy capable people in their home of all ages, from children right up to seniors, is amazing. Just to see the faces of the people at the event and what a great time that they have. So I have to tell you, it's the foremost event of its kind in North America.
So from your experience, can you tell me a little bit about some of the modified equipment that's used, if there is any?
Well, I don't know about modified equipment. At the event, the fishing equipment is supplied by sponsors, and most of the equipment is fishing rods and reels. There's life jackets. Bait is supplied. The event area itself is suited for wheelchairs and vehicles that have drop-downs, mechanical drop-downs, to enable people from wheelchairs and other devices to go out, because it's the actual waterfront. On the Windsor waterfront, and it's all level terrain, it's all concrete, there's a nice wall, there's a railing there, so there really is no special equipment. Just the event itself is hosted at a location which is ideal for such an event. So there's no rocks, there's no grass, uneven terrain where people can get hurt or have to struggle with wheeled things like wheelchairs or so on. So part of the fact that the event is run so well is its location right in the city and right at the waterfront. Very easy accessibility.
So how did you become involved with this event?
It started about 13 years ago. I have a good friend that lives in LaSalle. His name is Pat Pagano, and our friendship goes back over 30 years, almost 40 years. And Pat is a passionate angler, and he's always helped other fishermen. And he's joined me on many occasions. We've done fishing shows together and so on. And he had a desire on his heart to do something with the Italian community. That's where this stemmed from, the association in Windsor. And he thought, what better, because of his passion for fishing, to start an event where, pardon the pun, the hook is fishing, but it's to get families out for 3-4 hours of quality time where everything is provided for them in an environment that's safe and that's monitored with a lot of volunteers, where they can enjoy fresh air, catching some fish, food, entertainment, beverages, special venues and activities, if they're able to do it. So my involvement was because of the friendship with Pat Pagano. So I've literally been there since day one, and I'll continue to support it because it's such a great event and so good for the community in the Windsor area.
So how have you seen it change over time?
In participation, more people every year, more sponsor wanting to be involved because they see the quality. This isn't an event where, you know, it's a fishing contest where people win money or prizes as such, even though prizes are donated to the people. It's an event to get families that wouldn't normally be able to go out and spend time together, quality time, close to the water, and to enjoy everything provided to them. And to be honest with you, most of them do get prizes, but it's not because they're the biggest fish that they catch. The prizes are donated and given to them. So I've seen a real growth. It's been positive every year. We've seen more families bring, you know, their children and even adults that are handy capable to the event. So to me, it's all been positive. It's been a growth over the last 13 years.
So on that subject, is there any one success moment that stood out for you in these years?
Well, the success moment is when you see the expressions on the people's faces when they catch a fish. Now, you have to remember, these people, most of them with their families don't fish. You know, I fish, it's my career, and I fish, I have a passion for it. So even when I'm not producing television shows, I'm out doing promotional fishing and either hospitality or getting blog images and that kind of stuff, shooting underwater video. These people, probably, this is the only chance once a year to experience holding a fishing rod, getting a bite, reeling up a fish, and seeing this thing that's so different. So to me, it's the expressions. It reminds me a lot of when I used to take my kids fishing, and now that when I take my grandkids fishing. It's the special moment where you see someone experiencing something in such an innocent and wonderful way where they're enjoying it. So I've seen people that have come out every year, and you can see how much they look forward to it, smiles on their faces, literally running to the locations, if they're not in a wheelchair, to start the fishing, because they're so excited. It's kind of like Christmas to these people once a year, because that's how special the event is.
So if you could say any one message about need for a program such as this, what would you say?
I'd say that in every community, there are families that have different aged people that are limited to what they can do because of the situation that they're in. Families are busy. They have their lifestyle. They have work. They have to take care of their children, no matter what age that they are. I would encourage people, number one, to come out to the ICHA Handicapable Fishing Derby, and two, if there are associations out there that know of the event, they should try to clone it or do something similar. It's a lot of work. It takes volunteers. You know, they say that 20% of the people involved in something like this do most of the work, and it's true. So it's hard finding people that really put their heart into it to do it. But I know every community has a need, even some of the communities outside of Windsor that may not be able to come to Windsor, whether they're down on Lake Simcoe or towards London or up towards Sarnia, Moortown, and so on. I would encourage them to try to put an event like this together. It doesn't take long. The actual event is only about 2 or 3 hours, because when it's hot out and people have special needs, you can't make it a whole day thing. And the event is such that it has a variety of things. So the fishing is only part of it. It has the food part of it. It has the drink part of it. It has the special events and exhibits that are there and the entertainment. So to me, it, like I say, I can't put it any other way. It's kind of like Christmas to a lot of people. So it'd be nice if more people got to share Christmas wherever they are in, you know, outside of the Windsor area.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
He went on to mention something I found really quite remarkable. Some of the organizations provide fishing programs for people with vision impairments. Some even take individuals in hospital beds out on pontoon boats. This is important because it's not just a matter of providing an opportunity to go out and do one event. It's providing community. It's providing an opportunity for these individuals to do something, very freeing environment, something that can put their mind at ease, reduce stress, help them to recognize they have the strengths and the capabilities to achieve. Like you said, it really is an amazing thing seeing these individuals come together. Now, there's going to be things such as music, concessions, all that sort of thing. It's designed to create a family-friendly environment, something so not just the individual with a disability can enjoy, but they can share the experience with friends, family, the community, and in this way, they become more rounded, I think, in so much as they recognize that individuals within the community do recognize their strengths and do want to share some time with them. And really, that's the first step towards building a better tomorrow. Truly, it's activities like fishing that can bring people together, that all-important sense of community. For individuals with disabilities who might be getting out there, trying something new for the first time, this can be a real icebreaker. If a person with a disability finds themselves unwilling or hesitant to get out there and to explore what's possible in the world, it becomes sort of a comfortable environment for them, I think. Gets to a place where they say to themselves, my life is full enough, I don't need anything new. But the truth is, only by exploration, only by the willingness to take a step forward, to try something new, to learn about the community, does anyone make progress. Fact is, for a person with a disability, isolating themselves from activities such as this would be about the worst decision you could possibly make, because it's a matter of finding your place within the community. Not just the disabled community, but the world around us. Finding who we are, what our strengths are, what our interests are. That is a great step of personal enrichment. And honestly, I would encourage anyone who's thinking about trying something new in terms of disability life, give it a shot. What do you have to lose? Fact is, you can learn a very great deal just by taking a few hours, spending time with people. It could even lead to some very long-lasting friendships. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
CJAM 99.1 FM is hiring again. With the support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada, CJAM 99.1 FM is seeking applicants for a special programming and events coordinator. This is a contract position that will run between June 8, 2015 and June 7, 2016. The position carries a gross salary of $20,000 for that period based on a 30-hour work week. The successful candidate would play a major role in helping to organize CJAM's annual pledge drive while also helping the station to maximize its impact with special broadcasts revolving around campus events, Black History Month, Windsor Essex Pride, International Women's Day, and Joe Strummer Day to confront poverty in Windsor, Detroit. The deadline for applications is May 29th at 5 p.m. For a full job description, please visit cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Italo Labanon. He told us a little bit about the ICHA Fishing Derby. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Lawrence Gunther, a fisherman with a vision impairment. So tell me a little bit about your experiences as a fisherman with a disability.
You know, fishing is one of those great sports that really is not has little to do with a disability. It's all about feeling the bite. And as someone who can't see, I put a lot of focus on what I'm feeling. So I almost have an advantage over people who are looking around, maybe a little bit distracted.
So in your time as a fisherman, have you used any modified fishing equipment?
There's so many different fishing techniques out there, and it's all related to feeling for the bite, for a large part. I mean, there's some things that are totally visually oriented, like bobbers. I don't use bobbers. I mean, I don't know why everyone's so fixated on bobber fishing, but I guess for kids, you know, it gives them a chance to visually look at something and keeps their attention.
But for non-sighted people, bobbers are just a headache. They do have all sorts of other sorts of bite alarm type devices that are made for the mainstream fishing population, and I use a bunch of those for different things.
So, how did you get started with fishing?
Well, like most people who like fishing, they started as kids, right? I mean, their parents, grandparents, or neighbors or whatever introduced them to the activity. It's a low-cost kind of activity. It doesn't take a lot of money. You don't need a lot of expensive equipment. I mean, you can use just a stick with a fishing line tied to it, really. And, yeah, it's just a great way to be outdoors, and something I've carried on throughout my life.
So, in your time as a visually impaired fisherman, have there been any challenges with the sport?
Yeah, there's always challenges in terms of figuring out where the fish are, right? I mean, 90% of the water out there, if you look at any lake, you know, won't have fish. The fish are always relating to things like bait fish or structure. So you have to find the fish. And, you know, when I started fishing tournaments years ago, people would often give me advice and tips on where the fish were. But then when I started winning tournaments, you know, I got the same answer everyone else gets now. You know, well, where'd you catch that? In the water. What'd you catch it on? A hook, you know.
I like that. So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time as a fisherman, has there been any one success moment that stood out for you?
I think there's moments, you know, that I definitely think back on with enjoyment and excitement, you know, and it's usually about the fish that got away. It's always the fish that got away. What was it? How big was it really? You know, how come I lost it, you know, and how that battle that, you know, just didn't go your way. Those sorts of memories stick out. But, you know, you evolve as someone who fishes over the years. When you first start, you just want to catch a fish. And then you catch your first fish, and then you want to catch a lot of fish. And then you want to catch a big fish, and then you want to catch a lot of big fish. And eventually you get to the point where you just want to go fishing.
So, in your experience, are you tied to any professional fishing organization?
I'm a member of a number of fishing organizations, and I serve as the conservation director for our area bass fishing club. I serve as a conservation director for our area walleye fishing club. I'm a member of the muskie fishing club in the area, and I belong to some more national and international fishing organizations as well. It's a great way to meet people and to make friends and to share the passion.
So, if you could send any one message to the disabled community about the benefits of fishing for them, what would you say?
You know, it's a great sport. It's a great way to meet people. It's something you can do year round if you want to go out on the ice and tough it out in the winter time, or head south and go fishing around the world. I just finished reading Zane Grey's book on fishing, and you know, he wrote 80 books on 80 westerns, but he loved fishing. You know, he used the money he made writing books to go fishing. There's a ton of accessible ways to fish, and pontoon boats make fishing for people who use wheelchairs very accessible. You can roll on, roll off, and they're wonderful flat-bottom boats. There's all sorts of ways to shore fish. There's charter boats. Accessibility is something a lot of lodges and fishing resorts are starting to take very seriously and have incorporated into their buildings and so on, because they realize, you know, they want to be able to cater to that crowd as well.
So, why do you think it's important to keep the disabled community as a part of fishing?
I think it's an awareness thing. I think, you know, if the people who provide the services and the technology know that we're out there fishing, they will, you know, cater to our needs. It's not a cookie cutter type situation. Yeah, you watch those fishing shows, and predominantly you see middle-aged guys with pot bellies wearing, you know, baseball caps fishing. But really, I do outdoor shows. I exhibit at outdoor shows and do seminars, and you know, I meet all members from the LJTB community out there who fish. I meet all people from all different ethnic backgrounds who love fishing, all ages, all abilities. There's no one group that loves fishing more than the others, and I think the industry realizes that and is starting to become a little more specific in terms of targeting all these different markets.
So what are the next steps in your work?
You know, I think the idea of just putting fishing first, and what I like to do is use my ability to visualize and develop an impression and an understanding of what's taking place beneath the waves, where no one can really see what's going on down there. I mean, everyone who fishes wants to be able to understand what's happening down there, and they buy, you know, expensive sonars and maps and topographical maps, and, you know, they spend time in the water trying to figure it out. They have all sorts of weights and things that they drop to the bottom, and, you know, they're always sensing and feeling around down there and exploring. You know, there's ways of doing it with your touch, with your smell, with your sense of hearing, and with intelligence. That's what I'm trying to now teach, is that there's just more than one way to do this, and it doesn't have to be always through sight. And understanding what's happening beneath the waves, I think it's super important, because really we're planet covered mostly by water, and we can't just assume that because it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and just keep chucking our garbage into the water.
So I'm guessing, based on some of what you were saying, these techniques you teach have proven as effective as just working by sight.
Yeah, most fishing techniques are not sight related, and there's all sorts of equipment out there, harnesses and electric reels and things like that, that can make fishing available and accessible to anyone, regardless of what kind of disability they might have.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure, Cam.
For more information about Lawrence's work, visit bluefishradio.com for his podcast. What can I tell you, folks? Lawrence had exactly the right idea. Using his abilities to find new and innovative ways of doing things. People might assume on the surface that a visual response would be required. But if you look at this in a more historical context, when things like fishing and agriculture were more dominant than they tend to be today, ask yourself, how did someone with a disability survive if one skill and one skill only is essential to do these things? How is it these people survive the times? By finding new ways and finding adaptations. Use touch, use hearing, use smell. Use whatever skill set you do have available. One of the wisest statements I ever heard was, if you need a hammer and you don't have one, use a pipe. You find a way of getting things done. Truth of the matter is, a person with a disability can achieve. They can create. They can find ways of doing things. That's truly the remarkable gift of disability life. Not just finding ways of doing things for one's own purposes, but doing what Lawrence has done, taking it to the next level, teaching others, demonstrating to them what can be accomplished, and maybe at the same time clearing up some of the myths and the prejudices, the stereotypes. Now, we as a society are getting better in our recognition. However, inclusion is not an afterthought, nor should it ever be. And people might assume to make certain statements such as, how can a person who can't see fish effectively? How will they know what they've caught? Very simple. They feel it. Fact is, person's skill sets need not be defined by one thing they can do in a particular way. I maintain that individuals with a disability achieve great things using a variety of tools. If you rely completely on one aspect of your life, that in itself becomes a very rigid mindset. Comes down to a place where you say, oh, I've been paralyzed. Can't use my legs anymore. Therefore, I cannot run a marathon. I cannot keep up with the athletes that I used to work alongside. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you're passionate about something, if you love something enough, you find a way. You use your abilities. You take the support that you can find. I maintain it's always out there. You ask around. You say to yourself, I'm a person with a vision impairment, and I want to get out there and fish. Has anybody ever done this before? What have they tried? What's worked? What hasn't? And how can I adapt this to me? It should always be a matter of looking into the options before declaring something hopeless. Hopelessness is the most disabling thing there is. The mindset that says nothing can be done, nothing can be achieved. That is a very dangerous attitude. Long ago, people were considered to be hopeless with certain conditions. They were considered to be just something society didn't want to look upon. Many people were shuffled off to institutions or group homes or places just out of the way. However, we've grown a very great deal since then. These days, you see someone with a disability, you look, you ask yourself, what can they do? What have people of similar ability levels done? The first thing that comes to my mind is never, what's limiting this person? It's, what method can they use to achieve something? Because the potential is there. If you tell yourself something's possible, you start to see it as being possible. As I've said a million times, it's not always a matter of a direct cure, but the steps leading up to it. And the steps are the same in any activity in disability life. It's about finding a way to go forward, saying to yourself, all right, so I have an injury, so maybe my legs don't work the way they used to, but can I still get out there? Can I still participate in things? Can I still show the world that I am a strong, capable person? And the answer is invariably yes. If amputees can get out there, run marathons, why can't a person with a vision impairment do what they love to do in the sport of fishing? I maintain to you, there is no good reason that a person with a disability can't participate in any facet of life. And self-limitation is not what I would call a good reason. It is simply an illusion people create for themselves, for a hesitation to try, an unwillingness to adapt to a new way of thinking. But after a time, most people with disabilities, in my experience, they start to see it as less of this big, giant, scary thing, and more a matter of day-to-day life, finding solutions to the little everyday things, finding ways simply to live at their best. It's just about creative thinking. That's what disability life really means. No matter what the type, you can find a way to explore the things that you'd love to. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink4, HANDILINK, and the numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.